Sports Talk Mississippi, streaming at supertalk.fm and supertalktv.com. We are on the campus of Mississippi State inside the Bryan Building and joined by John Cohen. Normally, guests would appear on the Farm Bureau phone line, but we get to do this one in person. Always good to see you. Appreciate you taking a few minutes with us this afternoon.
My pleasure.
I was thinking driving in today, and I'm kind of struck by this every time I pull onto campus, what it must be like for you, thinking back to when you were a player. And then when you came here in 2006, how much things have changed, how different it looks when you pull on campus.
Wow. You know, it's from, I think a lot of folks my age can relate to that question. You drive up, you're right. There was a time where you could see cattle. There was a time where you could smell cattle. There was a time where, you know, many of the buildings on our campus might not have matched architecturally. There was a time where our campus wasn't as clean and as beautiful as it is now. And that's really due to the hard work of Dr. Mark Keenum and several others. This campus is beautiful. There's a very consistent type of building on our campus, and it really flows in a much different way. So, yeah, stepping on this campus, driving on and seeing Duty Noble, seeing the football stadium, seeing all the buildings on our campus, especially the new ones. It's a different look. It's a different feel, and we're awfully proud of what we've been able to accomplish.
And, you know, it's a little crazy because it's rare, because normally when I'm here it's for athletic events, so it's rare that I've been into kind of the heart of campus, which has got a different feel to it. But the athletic complex kind of serves as the front door to the university.
It does.
Depending on which way you come in, I suppose.
It does. It's extremely convenient for our fans. You know, there's so many facilities around the country that are off campus, and the fans really don't get that on campus feel as well as the student body. But we're really proud of the facilities we have, and we think they serve us well. We're definitely always trying to improve them. We're going to do some work to the west side of our football stadium, obviously improvements to Duty Noble. We're going to build a really nice facility over at softball, a dressing room hitting facility in softball. Brand new indoor tennis facility. So always, you know, trying to add and make the student-athlete experience a little bit better.
And, of course, with facilities right now, we know that sort of the next thing on the list is the Humphrey Coliseum, a major renovation plan for that. When you look around the conference, you know, I've been to the Pavilion and the Auburn Arena, brand new arenas. What made renovating the Hump make more sense than building an entire new arena?
Yeah, I think at one point we discussed, you know, starting from scratch. But every architect we talked to made the comment that our seating bowl was not just good, but as good as anywhere in the entire country. And what they kept telling us is you can, you know, demolition the entire building, but you're probably going to want to rebuild that seating bowl exactly the way it is. What we don't have are great amenities around the concourse area. We don't have a great view in, a great walk-in experience. Certainly, things like bathrooms and concession areas, we want to improve those. We really don't have a premium opportunity now other than some floor seats for many of our fans who enjoy that experience. And we're going to be able to accommodate all those things. So I'm really excited about this project. You know, $50 million plus dollar renovation. And I think when folks walk in the building, they're gonna see and feel a different facility.
What's the level of trepidation when you talk about a construction project in the climate that we're in right now, where, you know, lumber costs are two or three times what they were, and steel costs are up, and PVC pipe, like everything costs more. So you go into it thinking it's a $38 million project or a $50 million project, but you don't really know where you're going to end up.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the whole supply chain issue that we have, it really doesn't affect you until it affects you.
Yeah.
And that's a concern to us because we want to stay on schedule. We are very, very confident that all the materials, the steel, the wood, everything that we're going to need, we're going to be able to get those materials on time and be able to complete this project in a timely manner. Going to have to work around our season, our 22-23 basketball season.
I was going to say, what's the timeline?
We will have to do that. But I think within 14 months, 15 months, we'll be very, very close to having the first phase completed.
So basketball season ends this year and you start almost immediately?
Start immediately. You know, they'll start putting up the temporary fencing to keep folks out. They'll begin working on a brand new road outside of the Coliseum that will eliminate the road that's very close to it right now. And that's a safety measure, but also gives us an opportunity to have a gathering area for fans outside the Humphrey Coliseum and Duty Noble.
So you mentioned a second ago enhancements to Duty Noble. I don't know if you know this, but you just built it a couple of years ago, and it's really, really good.
Yeah.
What are you going to do to make it better?
Well, you know, we just put in a ribbon board, and we built a brand new weight room facility. What's really interesting is the majority of those dollars, the vast majority of those dollars, were given back by Mississippi State baseball players, former players. So, and I hate to use former because, you know, after last year's experience, you realize that it's not a former to it. Once you're a part of this place, you're always a part of this place. And those guys are big leaguers. A lot of our former players have kicked in a lot financially for our baseball program to continue to grow.
And, John, that's a little unique. I mean, there have been studies out there about former athletes at schools. They are there for their scholarship time. They play, and then they go on with the rest of their life, and they don't really give anything back, regardless of how successful they are. So that's kind of a big deal to be able to build those relationships.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. I've always said this. Everywhere I've ever been, it hasn't been in the past the majority of student athletes who have done the lion's share of giving. What's incredible is if you look at student managers have an incredible history no matter where you go. Student trainers, student managers, those guys who worked their fingers to the bone when they were students, those guys go out and they're really successful and they give back. But we've been very fortunate. We've had a lot of student athletes give back. Football, basketball, baseball, and many other sports. And I think it says a lot about Mississippi State.
You mentioned football a second ago. You said the West Side Upper Deck. I would have thought the first thought would have been the South End Zone. What's going on in the West Side Upper Deck?
Well, you know, the end zone's a little bit of a blank slate for us other than, of course, the field house. And we're going to get to work on that. The West Side, of course, is one of the oldest structures in college football. So we've got to address some issues there. We want to modernize some things on that side. We want to make it a lot more fan-friendly, to be completely honest with you. So we want to work on that area. You know, upper decks, you just kind of wonder about the future of upper decks. How can we make that more attractive to our fans? What can we do? What are the things that are special to Mississippi State that we can do with our facilities at football to make it more Mississippi State-oriented? So we have some brilliant plans by some just outstanding engineers and architects that we feel like are really going to blow our fans away. Not ready to throw that out just yet exactly what it is, but really excited about the opportunities in front of us.
So the upper deck goes away?
No, I don't think the upper deck goes away, but okay. I think there's some really creative things we can do with it.
Is that the next scenario for stadium building, is maybe lower the seating capacity to have that more premium experience?
Well, there's a reason. You look at major metropolitan areas that have NFL franchises. They don't have 100,000-seat stadiums. There's a reason for that. What the NFL has done a great job of is really making almost every seat a premium-oriented seat, right? So that's kind of the direction that I think it's headed. When you're asking people to drive great distances and you're asking people to not watch on television, to make that special trip, you've got to do some things. And we're committed to making sure that their experience in our ballparks is top-notch.
So we touched on basketball. We touched on football. I ask you timeline on basketball. What about football? I mean, is that in the next 2 or 3 years thing? Is it in the next 18 months thing?
I really believe we will be able to do some noticeable things before this football season starts.
Oh, really?
We're working on that right now. I really believe that we're probably maybe 2 seasons away from, again, some huge renovations to the west side. And then the south end zone is probably around 5 years away, because that's going to be a major issue. Over in football right now, though, we're installing 2 brand-new video boards. You believe it or not, our first video board was installed 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So those things don't have very long shelf lives. They're Daktronics boards. They'll be state-of-the-art. Ribbon boards going all the way around the facility that actually work, that actually give beneficial information that all of our fans can have. And all of it's integrated. So because of Daktronics having the entire contract, all of that will be integrated and handled in one specific area. And again, I just think it'll be much more fan-friendly than it's ever been.
So when you talk about all these facilities, obviously there is a great need for donors to give, but some of this is possible because of this massive amount of money that's coming from the conference every year. We get the, I mean, you've known for a while, we get the official release this week, but $56 or so million. And we know that that number is going to go up again in a couple of years. I mean, it went up $10 million this year without the new TV contract. Where does this thing end up?
That, I think that's a great question. But I also know that this SEC footprint, it continues to grow. And, of course, with expansion of the league, with Oklahoma and Texas, it expands even more. Does it expand even beyond that? Who knows? I think what we have learned post-COVID is that things are going to change. The only thing we can count on is a lot of change. And we'll just keep moving forward. I think, you know, we're so blessed to be in the Southeastern Conference, and you're right, the revenue that's created by our league is astounding. And what I've loved so much about our league is every school contributes in a different way, in a different group of sports. And it just makes this league so powerful, so exciting to be a part of. But yes, financially, we're very fortunate that the leadership in the league, led by Greg Sankey, has done a remarkable job allowing us to have the funding to build some of the best facilities in the country.
Back with John Cohen, Sports Talk Mississippi, streaming at supertalk.fm and supertalktv.com. Great to be with you. Kind of talking all things Mississippi State athletics. We're going to look at some of the national stuff that's going on as well. Baseball season beginning. So much excitement around this program. Was the tweet of 13,000 season tickets sold? Was that a misprint?
No. No, I actually...
That's insane. Okay, how much is that up year over year? 5,000?
Probably a little bit more than that. Just so many people want to be involved.
Congratulations, and, by the way, on leading the country in attendance this year.
Thank you. You know, we just had a discussion about that. You know, the discussion in baseball around our league and really throughout the country has always been paid versus actual. You know, your Tuesday night, it's 46 degrees. That can change your, you know.
13,000
yeah.
for Mississippi State and Alcorn State on a Tuesday night.
Yeah, sure.
Paid.
Yeah. Paid attendance.
But, yeah, we're awfully proud of that, and you know, we'll have some special moments this spring with that, and our kids get to defend a national championship, and I think it really is a groundswell of support. And you say that, there's always been support for Mississippi State baseball, but the national championship, I think, really jump-started the program again.
All right, so you used a word that I would push back on. You said defend a national championship, and I've just argued in the past that you're really not defending anything. You won it. You're the reigning national champs, but I'm genuinely curious, is that a mindset as a coach or as an athletic director where you want them going out and defending that title, or do you just say, look, last year was last year, go be you this year?
You know what, you sound a lot like an English major. You're getting into semantics here.
You're
like
so much
it.
Smarter than me. I'm just throwing it out.
He gives me so much trouble every show. It's
no,
just
I
ridiculous.
Like that. I mean, I like playing the semantics game. You're absolutely right. There's nothing to defend. You have to go out there and attack it every day. If you're not on offense, you're on defense. We don't want to be on defense. We want to be on offense. And I think that's been the message that Chris Lemonis has had with our club. And I fully expect those guys. You know, there's, you know, one of the things that happened recently, well, actually this fall, that I think is really interesting. You go in and, you know, you have national championship rings and you keep honoring the team. But you're honoring a team, many of those kids didn't win a national championship.
Yeah.
And they're still getting honored. And as a former coach, that doesn't bother me, but it concerns me a little bit because, you know, you want your kids to, you know. Leah Beasley's office right next door, and she does a great job with all of our external stuff. And I remember when I was a baseball coach at 15, we had a bad year. And she said, hey, you guys are going to be honored at halftime. I said, you know, In the fall after we had a really poor season in 15, the fall of 15, I said, no. She goes, no, we honor all of our teams at a TV time. I'm like, no, you're not going to honor this team. She said, are you kidding me? I'm like, no, we're not going to honor a team that just had a horrible year. We're going to walk on that football field when we win championships. If we win the SEC, if we win regionals, if we go to Omaha, that's worthy of being on that football field. And I don't say that to be prideful, and I don't say that to be disrespectful. because all of our kids deserve to be recognized. But we do have some kids in that baseball program who haven't won a national championship, who haven't won a game, who haven't thrown a strike, who hasn't gotten a hit yet. And I know our coaching staff does such a great job of making sure that that group is really hungry, because they are going to have a target on their back. There's no question about that.
That being said, then, this opening weekend coming up, the stencils out there on the outfield wall, the specter of the national championship is going to hang over this weekend, even though it's the start of a new season. You're a former coach. How do you get a team to not worry about what the past was and start focusing on the future when everybody in the stadium is going to be thinking about it?
Yeah, and how about this? We're playing Long Beach State, guys.
Mm-hmm. I mean, good team.
In the top 25. I couldn't help myself. I had to look at their arms. Jake Gautreaux was
showing me. I bet if I go in your office right now, there's a full scouting report on the desk.
And I looked at the arms. They have real arms. I mean, they could, that's a team that can not only come and beat us, they come in and win the series. They could sweep us if we don't play well. And I give a lot of credit to Chris, because that's the type of scheduling that gets a team ready. We had some moments last year where we were real good. Missouri comes in here and derails us. Arkansas comes in here and destroys us. We go to the SEC tournament. We're not very good. But what Chris and Fox and Gautreaux did, such a great job of getting the kids back on track and focused in on what's really important. And I think you asked me about preparation for the season. I know. That's exactly how they're treating it. You guys haven't earned anything in 22. Some of you earned a lot in 21, but you didn't earn anything in 22, and you got to start from scratch.
There's been a lot of talk about Landon Sims. I'm going to baseball coach John Cohen.
Oh.
Making the transition.
Watch out.
From back end of the bullpen to Friday night starter. And obviously the stuff's there. It's incredible. He was just basically unhittable a year ago. The strikeout to walk ratio, the batting average, all of the numbers were off the charts. We've seen examples of guys making that transition who were great at the end of the game that didn't transition well. Why does this work, you think, for Landon Sims?
Well, first of all, he can pitch. Okay, and there are guys who have great arms who can't pitch, guys who have great stuff who can't pitch. He's a guy who has a great arm who can pitch. So that's where it all starts. I think this is something Chris and Fox and our staff had to do. I think it's something that Landon wanted to do himself. I think just giving him this opportunity to show what he can do on a Friday night is important. There's no way to win this argument, because you want to have a legitimate Friday night guy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you want to have that guy standing in the bullpen who has already proven himself as one of the elite closers in the history of this program. I will say this. Psychologically, the huge advantage to having him in the bullpen, from my vantage point, and this is just former coach, is the fear of the other team saying, they got that guy sitting down there and he's real good. Now, we have some other candidates who are going to be really good as well. Having him down there as a weapon, not even throwing a baseball, gets into the consciousness of the team.
You feel like you only have 7 innings.
That's right. If he starts and he throws 4 or 5 innings and he gets 100 pitches into it, the other team goes, whew, he's done.
Yeah.
Now he ain't down in that bullpen anymore. But again.
Yeah, I was talking to Chris Burke the other day, and he said when he was with Houston, they had Brad Lidge.
Yeah.
And that's how they felt. If it got to the 8th inning, it was over.
Yeah.
And he said, so selfishly, like from an offensive standpoint, kind of like that idea. He said, but I completely get wanting to get 100 innings out of Landon Sims instead of, 56.
It's a real dilemma. It's a good problem to have. I wouldn't even call it a problem, but they're going to have to make some decisions in the month. Do you keep him there? And that's the one thing that Chris has always done. He has made moves in our baseball program, and he's about 100% of the moves that he has made in terms of moving kids to different positions or giving them different roles. The thing I know about Landon Sims is he will do whatever it takes to help Mississippi State win baseball games.
I want to get to some kind of big college athletics topics in just a second, but I do want to ask you about this. Not a ton of momentum right now with basketball. You've talked about the improvements to Humphrey Coliseum, trying to get fans re-engaged. When you look at where things are basketball-wise, and obviously there's some season left to try and finish strong and make a postseason run, where's your evaluation? How do you go through that?
Well, when you talk about I'll start on the men's side. I know I was in Tuscaloosa last night. Our kids are disappointed. there's no blame here. There's no finger pointing going on. It hasn't gone the way we wanted to. I think we have a very talented team. In fact, yeah. I think in terms of our overall athleticism, I'd put us in the top six in the league out of 14 schools. You know, I think we're very athletic. I think we move well. Toto's a guy who's really struggled with some injury things, unfortunately. You know, he's a big factor when he's on the floor. I do know this. This program is better than the way Ben Hallen found it, and I have a deep appreciation for that. But I also know that we've been disappointed, Coach Hallen included, with the way things have gone this year. So we will continue to, you know, do what the coaching staff is doing. They evaluate their players. They make adjustments. And everything else. We will just continue to evaluate what's going on. But I really do not think it's a question of effort, because sitting behind our kids, watching our kids in practice and in games, they're giving a great effort. It's just not happening right now. But I tell you what, we got a bunch of quad ones right in front of us. Yeah. And it only takes that one game to really shift the momentum for a basketball program.
And then Doug Novak has kind of worked miracles in the second half of the season.
He really has. Just really happy with Doug. People ask me all the time, you know, will he be a candidate? Certainly. He will for sure be a candidate. He's proven to do some incredible things with our women's program. I think the kids are really comfortable with him. But certainly this is a national brand in women's basketball, and we're going to get right back to where we need to be. We've taken some strides this year, really, with seven scholarship players, you know, who are able to compete. So, again, those guys are giving a heck of an effort every time out, too. Watching them just play Kentucky just 2 days ago, really kind of ran out of gas. They're playing two really good basketball teams in a 48-hour period. That doesn't happen if you're outside of tournament play. So, again, very happy with that, and we'll continue to monitor and evaluate that coaching situation and that obviously Doug will be part of that search process.
Yeah. So there's some buzzwords in college athletics right now. You've got an acronym, NIL. There's transfer portal. There's conference realignment. Is that enough to keep you up at night?
Well, the intersection of all those things,
yeah,
has really changed the landscape of everything we do. It's an interesting time to be in intercollegiate athletics. But hopefully things will flatten out a little bit in terms of all those issues you just talked about.
You have one of the most unique perspectives for when it comes to transfer athletes, because you were a transfer athlete, then you were a coach, and now you're an administrator. You know, if you were to put a grade on what's happening right now, could you do that? And do you see it sort of flattening out in the next couple of years, where kids are going to start figuring out, maybe I don't need to leave at the first stop, because if I do, I'm stuck at the second stop 3-4 years.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I think kids will be a little more savvy in terms of the portal. The grass isn't always greener. The real shame of it for me, though, is this, and I hate the words mid-major, right? Because I worked at a place like Northwestern Louisiana, and, you know, my first year of college was at Birmingham Southern. It bothers me that kids go to these schools, they're given these incredible opportunities, and then when things go right for them, they might want to bolt. You know, I understand it completely. I did exactly that thing.
Yeah.
Now, I had to sit out a year, but I made that decision with my family, and I decided that Mississippi State was a better place for me. So I totally get it. What I wish more people would understand is this. You talk about the rights of student athletes, and you talk about opportunities for student athletes, and I'm all for it. Every time there's an opportunity provided for a transfer to go somewhere else, it's taking away an opportunity for somebody, another student athlete. Here's what I mean. Let's just use Alabama as an example. Kid transfers to Alabama. They have a 25-man recruiting class. The kid transfers in from Oregon. That's one less high school kid playing at the University of Alabama football. We have a transfer who comes into our program, Mississippi State. Kid in our state has dreamed of playing at Mississippi State, as many of them do. That young person might be denied that opportunity because we took a transfer. So for every opportunity, there's an opportunity taken away. It's a zero-sum game. And I don't think everybody clearly understands that part of it.
So in a utopia, Like, I'm right there with you. And you're like, yeah, man, you feel bad for what this is doing. But with the stakes as high as they are, and the salaries as high as they are, and the only measurement that anybody really cares about is wins and losses, what are you going to say to coaches on that?
No, you're exactly right. And I think that's the elephant in the room is coaching salaries. I think there's a large portion of our country that says coaches are making a lot of money. A lot of coaches really earn that money. A lot of coaches spent a long time in their careers not making any money, yeah, and working their tails off to get to a level where they could make some money, just like every other industry. So I totally get it. But I think people see coaching salaries, they see the result instead of the process, and they immediately jump to where is that money for the student athlete. I don't totally disagree with that. And I can totally see where that would be the thought process. But as a former coach, I also know, I remember those 5 years I'm making $300 a month at the University of Missouri. And I remember the family pressure saying, what are you doing? And then, you know, having my first child, and I made it up to $18,000 a year. There's a lot of risk reward in this profession, and you know, it's easy to pick off the top layer and say they're making too much, or too much is being done for them. And again, I'm not totally against that train of thought, but I think we have to understand that there's a process for student athletes, and there's a process for the coaching world as well.
Maybe along the same lines, but a little bit different. There's a finite amount of money out there among people that care about Mississippi State, people that care about LSU, people that care about Ole Miss. I don't know what that number is. I mean, it varies from school to school. Are you concerned about the way people give changing if they feel like, look, I need to reallocate what I was giving to the Bulldog Club to some sort of fund that's supporting name, image, and likeness that I think is going to help get better players?
Well, the purpose of the Bulldog Club is to make the experience better for the student athlete. That's the purpose, either directly or indirectly, through facilities, through coaching salaries, through equipment and things of that nature. If there's a way for the student athlete to get supported outside of our Bulldog Club, I'm all for that. We want it to be legal. We want to follow our state law. We want to follow the NCAA rules, of course. But I do think that the student athlete should have the right to benefit from those opportunities. If that means less money coming into a group like the Bulldog Club, I understand that completely, because, again, we're on the same sides of a coin.
Yeah.
We're there to support the student athlete.
Really is an interesting time. The law, as it's written in Mississippi, precludes athletics departments, universities from being involved in NIL. Is that something that needs to continue to evolve a little bit?
Yeah, I think because name, image, and likeness is so new, and we haven't even been through a year of this. Of course, it started in our state on July the 1st, that I think there will be an evolutionary process to the law itself. And I think we're in such a great state where people work together, you know, to understand, hey, can we make this better? If we can make something better, especially for our student athletes and for our institutions, and let's find a way to do it. So I have a lot of confidence in the fact that things can and will evolve.
There was a report, and you haven't made it official, but there was a report that Mississippi State had added a football game for 2026 with Louisiana Monroe. That would put you at 4 for 2026, when we expect Texas and Oklahoma to be in the conference at that point. Have you gotten any guidance from the SEC about how future schedules are going to look yet, or is that could be a potential? You may have a buyout game in 2026.
Yeah, we've discussed that at a very high level at the league. And, again, everything's on the table. Is it a nine-game schedule coming up, a nine-game SEC schedule? Does it remain an eight-game? What does that do to our league? What does it do to scheduling? What does it do to our non-conference situation? And you're right. You know, contractually, many of us have 4 non-conference games already scheduled from 25 and beyond. We'll see what happens. Yeah. I know this. We have some great minds in that room, and, of course, we have great presidents and a great administration at the Southeastern Conference. We will come up with the right answer. Greg Sankey has consistently led the way in terms of making great decisions. One of those decisions, as you guys might remember 2 years ago, was to play football when the whole world was telling them not to. And that was
that worked out well.
One of the great decisions.
I'd like to retroactively thank him for that. Appreciate that. Kept us employed.
Yeah,
all of us.
Yeah. No question there. So on college football playoff expansion, I'll probably be more blunt and less politically correct than you will. It feels like there are two, maybe three groups that have gotten their feelings hurt, and they've said, we're taking our ball and going home, and standing in the way of the sport overall advancing and creating more opportunities. You get a lot of lip service out of creating opportunities and student welfare and all those things, but then you're like, yeah, but we didn't get it our way, so we're done. We're going to hold it up. Just what's your take on where we are with 12 teams?
Richard, I would love to believe that we're beyond that. We're beyond personal feelings and people getting their feelings hurt. I'd love to believe that.
And then Jim Phillips,
I'd love to believe when
ECC opens his mouth, and we realize we're not.
Mike, our kids would love to believe in unicorns, John. But yeah.
I really want to believe that because, obviously, if you increase the field, if you give more opportunities, that's better for the student-athlete. It's better for institutions. It's better for everybody to give more. We're just talking about opportunity, right? Right now, the opportunities for four schools to play in meaningful, I mean really meaningful posts, that represents 3% of the Division I college football world, whereas most of the championships are somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 25% of the entire membership get an opportunity to play tournament-oriented sports. So I would love to see us go in that direction.
And retroactively, I mean, if you took this back to 2014 – both Mississippi State and Ole Miss in the state of Mississippi would have been playoff participants.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And both those teams, in my opinion, capable of beating anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the right day, with the right personnel, I mean, capable of beating anybody. And I believe that about the Southeastern Conference. That's why I think an expanded field is so important. Because I do believe you're going to have a fourth place SEC team get into a spot eventually when all this works out. And I think that fourth place team could win a national championship, just like in baseball, just like in softball, just like in basketball.
I don't think Greg Sankey says anything accidentally. I think he's pretty calculated, and he thinks before he speaks. He has let his guard down a little bit, and I thought the quote a few weeks ago when they were coming out of that last set of meetings and they got nothing done, where he has said, look, we're on board with doing what we need to do. He said, but if we don't get it done now, you can't just assume that we're going to re-engage, talking about the SEC. Was that a kind of a shot across the bow that said, we might not need you guys? Just think about that.
Well, in some respects, the system in place right now isn't really hurting the Southeastern Conference. Although I will say this, having two teams from our league play for a national championship is wonderful, and I applaud Georgia and Alabama. They had great years. They deserve to be there. Is it more exciting for me personally if there's a third and fourth place team that are kind of creeping around the corner with an opportunity to win? I think that's a better case scenario, and I don't think anybody disagrees with that. But certainly, look at the leagues right now who don't have that opportunity, that would have that opportunity if the system could change. And I guess it just doesn't make sense to me that they would want to deny their own student athletes the opportunity to play playoff football.
And we're really in a spot where, I mean, George Kliavkoff in the Pac-12 has said, we'll vote for anything. We know where the SEC and the Big 12 stand. We know where Notre Dame stands. I mean, you're talking about the people that were in that working group. And all of the group of five, I know Mike Oresko wants us to get away from that term, but all the group of five teams, they would benefit from it. So it's the ACC and the Big Ten that's holding the whole thing up.
Yeah, well, Richard,
I just want to see if I get far.
Your official comment on that, on the record, John Cohen.
Richard, I would like to believe that cooler heads will prevail and they will get where it needs to go. But I do agree with the commissioner.
Before the end of the existing contract?
That part I can't answer. That part I don't know. But I know that it's a lot more complicated than just drawing it up on a chalkboard. But having said that, I do agree with you. I think it's in everybody's best interest. And imagine in basketball if we went and said, hey, we're going to match this up with football, and 3% of the Division I schools get into the NCAA tournament. That's not supposed to be the way it is.
Let's sort of bring this back to where Richard started the interview, talking about campus. And whenever you talk about Dr. Keenum, you use the word vision a lot. What is the vision for John Cohen in the next 5 to 10 years for Mississippi State? What is this campus going to look like in 2028, in 20, 32.
You know, I think it has a lot to do. I mean, physically, our facilities, we want to keep upgrading our facilities, keep staying out in front on that, building what we have. I want us to be competitive in everything we do. I want us to play for championships. I want our kids to have a great experience. I want all that to continue. But you mentioned name, image, and likeness, and you mentioned the transfer portal and all those other issues that intersect. I do think something's going to have to come to a head there. Some type of negotiation, some type of agreement's going to have to take place for everybody to have equal footing in terms of competing at the highest level.
Always enjoy your insight. Really appreciate you being generous with your time, and good to catch up.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
John Cohen, Athletics Director at Mississippi State.
Thank you, sir. Awesome. Do you think I gave you anything that's worthwhile?